Hello and welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, broadcasting from the sanctuary for independent media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, who are known today as the Stockbridge Muncie community. I'm Sina Bazila Hickey.
And I'm Kathy Silber. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, we begin with Shirley Buell, president of the League of Women Voters of Rensselaer County, who joins us live to tell us what we need to know about the August 23rd election. Then, roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry brings us excerpts from remarks at the most recent rally by Capital Roots workers in their quest to unionize. Later on, our very own H. Bosch Jr. brings us another episode of Triple E's in his conversation with State Trooper Bobby Murray. After that, Mama Love, founder of Mother to Son, Mothers Talk to Your Sons About Gun Violence, introduces her organization and previews their August 13th summer jam. And finally, Bob Welton of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition joins us live to bring us the latest on the Dunn Dump. But first, here are the headlines.
The Times Union reports that after weeks of accelerating daily monkeypox numbers appear to be leveling off in New York, mainly in New York City. In the last 2 weeks, the number of new cases has topped out at about 80 per day. The health department noted that cases were disproportionately impacting African Americans.
Consumer prices jumped 8.5% in July compared with a year earlier, the federal government announced on Wednesday, down from a 9.1% year-over-year increase in June. On a monthly basis, prices were unchanged from June to July, the smallest such rise in more than 2 years. The July inflation level was the highest in 40 years. Airlines are 30% higher than they were a year ago. Airfares are 30% higher than they were a year ago.
Troy will be holding a household hazardous waste disposal event on Saturday, August 27th. At the Brunswick Town Hall, free for Troy residents. Troy will also hold a materials collection event for recycling electronics, shredding paper, and disposing of tires. On Saturday, September 10th, at the Troy Resource Management Facility, registration is required for that one, and it's limited to Troy residents only. Visit troyny.gov for more information on both events.
The Troy Record reports that Thaddeus Steed of Troy was arrested Monday for the shooting death in March of Maurice D. Miller, also of Troy. Police charged Steed with second-degree murder and second-degree criminal possession of a weapon.
The Mid-Hudson News reports that the New York State Fair is prohibiting off-duty police officers from carrying concealed weapons into the fair starting this year. Only officers on duty working the event will be allowed to display weapons on their person.
Dan Ball of WNYT reports that the nationwide teacher shortage is also affecting the Capital Region, which currently has 400 openings for teachers. According to his research, school is scheduled to start in 3 weeks.
Workers at Joseph's House and Shelter in Troy voted to unionize on Thursday, August 11th, winning by a 3-1 margin. And that's it for the headlines. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, listener-supported radio that builds community in Troy and the surrounding Capital Region through grassroots participation.
Our content is produced by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or call 518-272-2390.
There is an election coming up on August 23rd, and it's unusual this year. Shirley Buell, president of the League of Women Voters of Rensselaer County, joins us now to explain. Hi, Shirley.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you've told me that the election season in Rensselaer Rensselaer County this year is unique. How so?
Two reasons, I would say. One is that after the 2020 census was completed, Redistricting occurred throughout New York State and in Rensselaer County. So there were some district changes. The second reason is that Antonio Delgado was appointed as lieutenant governor, and that left an open office in his former positions, which was a congressional House of Representative position.
So does that mean that so that there will be an election to fill his slot as well, a special election?
Yeah. So in August, the reason we're having August primaries was because of the redistricting changes and legal challenges. But in fact, there will actually be two elections on August 23rd. One to replace Antonio Delgado, and the other one, a primary election.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Does this mean that everybody in the area, because of redistricting, might be in a different district with potentially a different polling place than before? Some will stay the same, some will be different?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Definitely. So the easiest way to check to know both where to vote and who's going to be on your ballot is what?
The League recommends going to www.vote411.org. And it will ask you your address. It will also ask you, I believe, your date of birth and your party, but it will identify for you who you can vote for, and it will also let you know where you can vote. There's different links you can click on once you get into it.
So you can find your polling place and you essentially get a preview of what's going to be on your ballot, so you can figure out all your choices before you walk in there. You won't be surprised.
Correct.
Okay, so now let me ask you this. Let's first talk about the special election to fill the rest of Delgado's seat. So the only people who can vote in that one are the people who live in his district, which they would find out by going to vote411.org. And if that race appears on their ballot, that means, yeah, you can cast a vote in that one.
Correct.
Is that right?
That is correct. And for people who know what their district number was, it's for the, like, through the end of this year, congressional district 19. However, if you go into vote411.org, you don't have to know that. It will tell you for sure based on your address.
I think that's the safest way. Some people know their district numbers, some they don't. Some district numbers will stay the same for people, some will change. So just go by your address, go by vote411.org, and you won't go wrong. Is that right?
I would agree with that, yes.
All righty. So now, for voters who, actually, before we move on, if voters who are going to be voting in that race want to know, have a nonpartisan source of a sort of introduction to all the candidates, is there anywhere you would recommend they look?
Well, you can also get that information on the same website, vote411.org, and The way the information is put into that website is that the League of Women Voters sends an invitation to every candidate with identifying information and a few questions. It's up to the candidate to decide if they're going to complete it and then submit the answers. So hopefully there will be lots of information. I haven't checked it today, but there were many of the candidates who had put information in.
That's very helpful.
Help. Yeah, that should also help people.
All right, let's move on from the that special election. What are the other kinds of races that are going to appear on ballots in the area?
All right, well, the other election is a primary election, which means that people who are registered in a party that is running a candidate will be able, and a candidate that is opposed, so they will be able to vote and make a choice of which candidate they are choosing to run in the general election. So
right.
Again, it's a good thing to check this vote 411, because if you do put your address and your party in, it will clearly tell you if there is any primary for you to participate in.
That's right. And it goes by your registration. At this point, yes. What your register, it's too late to change it.
It is.
It's probably too late to even register. You need to be registered to vote by now in order to vote in that election. Is that true?
That is true.
Okay.
You would have had to be registered by late in July.
Okay. That ship has sailed. We don't even need to go there. So you said certain congressional districts will have primaries in one party or another, not necessarily both, not necessarily either. And also, is it true then that New York State Senate seats are also having primaries or no?
Well, that's one of the situations where there are not two candidates running for a Senate seat. So no, there are no primaries. There will be candidates in the general election.
Okay.
There are no primaries, right?
Okay. Then let me ask you this. Let's get into logistics about who's voting when and where. I think you've already cleared up this first question, who. People have to be registered by now. And you have to, if it's a primary, you're only eligible to vote in the primary of the party in which you are registered. Is that correct?
Exactly.
All righty. And now let's go to the question of when, because even though Election Day is August 23rd, I understand there's some early voting options.
That's correct. The early voting actually starts this Saturday. And there in Rensselaer County, there are three locations. One is in Skodak Town Hall, the other is Brunswick Town Hall, and the third one is at 500 Federal Street. It's the federal building, Social Security building in downtown Troy. And they're all of them have the same hours. It starts on Saturday. It goes through the following Sunday. So there's 9 days. And on Saturday and Sunday, people can go between 9 and 5. On Monday and Wednesday, 12 to 8. And then Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, 9 to 5. So there are 2 days that have evening hours, and the rest of the time it is 9 to 5. You can pick anyone you want to.
Right.
It's unlike when you vote on Election Day, where you have to go to the correct polling station.
Okay. We're coming to the home stretch. We don't really have time to talk about races, but I understand that one of the more interesting ones is for people living in Elise Stefanik's district, the Democrats will be having a primary to find out who's going to go up against her in the general election. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
All righty. Any other interesting races to look at?
Well, I mean, I think all races are interesting, but I think because of district changes and other things, I know that Jake Ashby, who has been the assemblyman for much of Rensselaer County, is running in the Senate race. So that'll be a little bit of a change. So, but basically, I think all of them have interest points.
Just to wrap up, if people have a question that they don't find on vote411.org, where do you suggest they go?
Well, I would actually suggest they call the Board of Elections. Certainly if it's around where, when, if they're registered, anything like that, call them.
Shirley Buell, President of the League of Women Voters of Rensselaer County, thank you so much for coming on and clearing all this up for us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So in their drive to unionize, workers at Capital Roots held a rally at the Urban Grow Center on River Street in Troy on Friday, August 5th. Hudson Mohawk Magazine roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry covered the noontime event and brings us excerpts from various speakers on their complaints against management and the hostile work environment at Capital Roots.
Everybody give it up for Lena. Woo! We have Melissa. Everybody give it up for Melissa. Yay! Nikki. Yay! So So we have Nikki. Thank you. Give it up again for Nikki. We have Marianne. Give it up for Marianne. We have Michaela. These are some of the folks who still work here. Fortunately, these are just some of the folks who still work here. We're gonna let them say a few words together.
Hi. Thank you everyone so much for coming out. It was incredible to see your all support in letters, emails, calls, and to see you all here. To have everyone here in person, turning up to support us here where we work. This is amazing. Thank you.
Hi everyone, thank you so much. I feel honored and privileged to work with these young, wonderful women beside me, and I'm so thankful for you guys all to come out here and show your support.
Thank you so much. This is really amazing. Super cool to see you all here. Thank you. Really, really appreciate your support.
You deserve a living wage!
You deserve a living wage! You deserve a living wage! You deserve a living wage!
So, I also wanna, I see a group of them over here. For the former Capital Roots employees, make some noise! Right now, because of the reputation of the organization in terms of low wages and it being a tough place to work, there are, what, 7 vacancies in counting, because we don't know who's going to get fired next in the latest act of retaliation. These folks used to work here. They also helped make this organization possible in so many ways, along with these folks, so just give it up for them. I know there's some folks who are interested in speaking, so if you want to just make your way over here. But before that, I just want to say, please email, call amy@capitalroots.org. Urge her, reverse course, reinstate Cody Bloomfield immediately. Stop the endless retaliation and toxic, and making the workplace so toxic immediately. And truly recognize their union. Stop trying to carve one or two folks out. Stop pretending that people are supervisors and have all these responsibilities when they can't even send an email without the director's approval. Thank you. What's disgusting? What's disgusting? What's disgusting? What do we want? When do we want it?
Now.
If we don't get,
shut it down.
If we don't get,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
Cody, would you like to say something?
Hi, everybody.
Too long they have taken advantage of our good hearts.
and don't stop.
Amy Klein has crossed the line. Hi, everybody. My name is Dan Kelly. I'm a member of the Socialist Party USA. I've been a member of CSEA, the union, for 30 years. And I was a representative for that union for several of those years. I'm also a community gardener with Capital Roots. So I really do think I have a dog in this fight. And I really think that being represented by a union that's literally and seriously respected by the management is going to make the work of Capital Roots a whole lot better. And I look over across the street at under the 594 of the building there, it says Black Lives Matter. That's a really good thing to say. But what about workers' lives? Workers in general, don't their lives matter? The only thing I have to say after that is union busting.
It's disgusting.
Union busting.
It's disgusting.
Union busting.
It's disgusting.
Amy Klein. Amy Klein. Amy Klein. Yay, union.
Yeah, this is Willie Taylor, the Roman Labor Correspondent, down here on River Street at the Capital Roots rally. And I have some workers that used to work for Capital Roots, and I'm going to ask them what's going on with that and why are they used to work at Capital Roots and not now. So I have as my guest
Lyndon Horvath.
And how you doing, Lyndon?
I'm doing quite well, thank you so much, sir. I am the former development coordinator from 2017 to 2018.
Oh, okay. So just tell me a little bit about Capital Roots, because people think of Capital Roots as a social organization, you know, doing things for the community. But we didn't know about the internal workings of it. So tell me something, what's happening with that, what went on, and why you are a former employee?
So I will say that it's not a very closely kept secret what the working conditions are like at Capital Roots. It's indicative how many past employees are here for this protest and to support the current employees and their unionizing efforts. I'll say also that the charges that have been leveled of wrongful firings, abuse, bullying, don't surprise me in the slightest based on my experience when I worked here. And I'm very, very excited for the unionizing effort. I really hope it addresses some incredible deep iniquities in how this organization operates internally.
So you say you worked here from what time to what time?
I worked here from September 2017 to December 2018.
And you're a former employee, so the reason that you left is because of them?
The reason I left was very, very low wages. I was making $14 an hour. I was bringing in, you know, $700,000 a year through efforts. I had attempted to address issues with the workplace environment, the workload, multiple times with management, and was targeted because of it. When it was discovered that I was looking for a job, I was seen outside of work at a cafe outside of work hours, and immediately my job was posted by Amy Klein, even though I had not given my resignation. And from that point on, I was pushed out of the organization.
Now the employees in there, they're fighting to get a union. How do you think that would benefit them?
I think having checks and balances on the top levels of power would be a huge first step into making this a better organization, an organization that better represents the community that it seeks to operate in. I think also it will offer a more equitable monetary like compensation practice, because I, at my time, knew of folks who had worked for years at at, you know, $12.50 an hour and had got maybe 1 25-cent raise in 3 years. So obviously pay equity is a huge issue as well. But I honestly think it's more so having a voice for the employees at the table. It's necessary.
All right. Well, thank you for giving me some insight.
That was roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry reporting from the Capital Roots Union rally on August 5th. Stay tuned to HMM and visit our website for more on this story.
For those of you just tuning in, I'm Sina Bazila Hickey.
And I'm Kathy Silber. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOCLP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOGLP 92.7 FM Troy, WOOSLP 98.9 FM Schenectady, and WOOALP 106.9 FM Albany. This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York.
If you like what you hear, you can support this program by telling a friend. Find today's stories and more at mediasanctuary.org.
It's time once again for another episode of Triple E's. This time, Bosch talks with Bobby Murray, who has been a state trooper for 13 years and holds the distinction of being the first second-generation African-American state trooper in the state of New York. Her father was a trooper before her.
Hello again, everyone. Today's guest is Miss Bobby Murray, a veteran of the New York State Police Force and the first African-American father and daughter to serve as a New York State trooper in the history of New York State. So I'll just say welcome to another segment of the Triple E's Education and Empowerment Entrepreneurship. And I am delighted to have you as a guest.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
good. Before we get started, let's give a shout out to everybody. All right, shout out to mom. Go right ahead. And family.
Shout out to mom and dad and family.
Okay, great. Okay, so I want to just go right into my questions because I'm so excited to have you on. So tell me a little bit about your background, you know, where you were born, family, education.
I was born in Albany, New York, raised in Albany, New York, and I currently live in Albany, New York. I graduated from Albany High School. After high school, I went to Virginia Union University in Richmond, Virginia. That's a historically black college. Okay. I was only there for a semester, and then I ended up coming home. And then from there, I enrolled in Hudson Valley. And from Hudson Valley, I enrolled in SUNY Albany. And then I didn't finish my degree. I think I was like a second semester junior when I stopped going to school. And then I just started working from there. I did a couple of customer service full-time jobs. I actually only had one full-time job before I became a trooper. So being a trooper is my second full-time job in life.
Right. So that's my next question. What made you decide to go into law enforcement? I know your dad has a very storied and stellar career in law enforcement.
Well, let's just start out with law enforcement was never my goal. Okay. That wasn't what I wanted to do. It was never even a thought for me, honestly. So what happened was when I went away to college in my first semester, I got pregnant.
Oh,
so I ended up, well, I came home pregnant. Mm-hmm. So I was a teen mom. So I had my first son at 18, my second son, I think at 22, maybe. So now I'm a single mom. I got two kids. I'm working and trying to go to school, which is why I ended up leaving school earlier than anticipated. Like, I didn't finish my bachelor because it just got to be so much with the kids and with work and like trying to make it all work. At some point, my dad comes to me and he's like, you know, the state police are giving it a test. You should take it. And I'm thinking like, I don't want to be no
fatherly advice.
But I always do what my dad tells me to do. So I just took the test. And I more so just took the test to humor him, not because I thought this was what I was going to end up doing. So I take the test because he was working at the time. He had a little inside access. So he was able to get the scores before they were even released to the public. And he's like, oh, wow, you did really well on this test. They're probably going to be calling you for the process in the first or second class.
Wow.
Now, at the time, I actually didn't have two kids. I had one kid, and I was pregnant with my second kid. I hadn't really told my family because I didn't know if that was going to go over so well because I'm still, you know, kind of single, not married. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't really told my dad just yet that I was having another child. So it just so happened that they didn't call me for the first or second class. They called me for like the third or the fourth. So when they did call me to start the processing, I had just had my son. He was probably like 2 or 3 months old. Well, yeah, I'd say he was like 2 months old. I think I went in February and I had him in December. So when you start the processing for New York State Police, there's like a physical portion. You have to pass certain physical standards for push-ups, sit-ups, run, and then you do psychological. It's like a whole long process. I go for this physical. Again, now I just had a baby. I'm coming off the couch. I didn't think I was going to be able to. I didn't think
literally
I was
coming
be able
off
to
the
pass
couch.
It.
Right.
Literally coming off the couch. But I did. I passed the physical. So the next day you go back and you take the psychological exam. It's like 1,000 questions. After the psychological, then they start your background. So they go to every employer you've ever had in your life. They go to every school. Like they pull your elementary school records. Everything you've ever done in your life, they pull and examine your credit records. Like everything. I passed the physical and I passed the psychological and I passed the background. I had to take a polygraph. So with each step that I passed, I'm getting closer and closer to getting this job. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they're actually going to give me, like, I never thought I was going to even get the job. So like, wow, this might be a thing. They're actually going to give me this job. I don't even know if I want this job.
Bless your heart twice. And I got to admit, my jaw dropped that night I ran into you. I'm like,
yeah. So, you know, I'm like, I don't even know if I want this job, but you know what? At the time, I'm a single mom. It was a great opportunity. You know what
yes,
I mean?
It was.
No one was going to, you know, give me the salary that they were going to give me and give me the opportunities
benefits,
that they were going to give me,
right.
Especially without a degree. You know what I mean? So I'm at this point, I don't know if I had any other better options going for me at the time. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to ride it through. I'm just going to see how it goes.
So that leads me to my next question then. As a Black woman, do you feel there's a need to have more Black women of color represent in the New York State Police?
There's absolutely a need, okay. Without question.
Okay.
And I'll say first,
because look what it did, like, for your life and career, you know?
For what it did for my life and career. You know, it's just, we just need that representation. You know what I mean? Every person brings something different to the job. I feel because of my background, where I'm from, how I was raised, my community connections, I just feel like I bring a different aspect to the job that is needed. You need that minority influence and that minority voice that isn't always heard or understood when it comes to law enforcement. Now, right now, currently, and I just was talking to a good friend of mine who's also a member of New York State Police. She's a sergeant now. She was saying that there are only 34 Black females in the state police currently.
So then what are you doing? That's going to lead me to my next question. What are you doing to bring awareness and exposure to that cause?
I do work very closely with our troop recruitment officer. So anytime I have an opportunity to go out into the community and speak to the public, talk to the kids, like, you know, I do a lot of public engagement type of things. I don't know if you know Pastor David Trainum. He runs the Alert program, which was like a law enforcement community thing. I try to, you know, work with him as much as I can just to do, like, you know, community policing, engage. Maybe if someone sees, you know, someone that looks like them doing it, it may pique an interest. You know what I mean? I always try to take every interaction as a recruitment opportunity. So I see someone who, you know, fits the mold, the right age, the right, you know, my qualifications. I'm always, you know, well, what are you doing with yourself?
I can ask you then, do you see yourself as a role model to young Black women of color? What would be your words of empowerment to a young Black girl who's a single mother and wanted to have a career in law enforcement? You know, because look at the path you have taken. You know, it wasn't the most conventional path, right? It was definitely challenging. And if you would look back, you would like, geez, I don't know how I did that. So what would be your words of empowerment?
Well, first part of your question, do I consider myself a role model? That's one of those things that I guess you really don't think about until someone asks a question of you. So I guess I am a role model. Try to set a good example.
You are
example.
Definitely a role model.
So
what you're doing, you know, and just waking up every day and looking at, you know, a woman of color, you know, in a career that, you know, is challenging.
So I guess, yes, I'm a role model. As far as advice that I would give women or young women of color that, or young women in general or young people, keep your options open. You know what I mean? And when I try to like start young with children, first of all, try to make good decisions and good choices, because the choices that you make as a child, they follow you. So if you're that kid that's in school and, you know, you're getting into a lot of fights and you're having a lot of problems, try to reach out to someone who can help you, because you don't want to be looked at as like a problem child. Every decision you make, depending on what you want to do with your life, if you want to be in law enforcement, it follows you. Like I said, when they do your background, they actually pull your elementary school records and they see how many times you were sent to the principal's office.
So did they,
you
know what I mean? Did they pull the part of your elementary record when you were the queen in the fashion show, you and my daughter? Because if they would have did that and showed the pictures.
I think that may have come up.
Well, and that's what closed the deal. That's how you got the job.
You think, you know, like your friends are smoking weed and you want to try it. Hold off on that until you know what I mean? Every decision, and not everyone is going to go through things and growing pains, but try to minimize Absolutely. It and try to things that I didn't think about. When I came on this job, my credit score was an issue. You know what I mean? Like I didn't have good credit.
And that's a good point to make. A lot of people would want to hear that, right?
They look at that like, hey, we're going to give you this, you know what I mean? So you just want to try to make good decisions, talk to people. So if there's anyone out there who is listening to this and they think they want to be in law enforcement and they have questions or they have comments or they have concerns, by all means, I hope that they reach out to you and you reach out to me. I will meet with anyone, speak to anyone, go anywhere, because we don't have a lot of role models to tell us what path you need to take to get to the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is what you want to do. A lot of kids will come to me like, well, should I take criminal justice? I don't think you should take criminal justice if you want to be a police officer. That's just my personal thing. And the reason why I say that is because if you get a criminal justice degree, the only thing you can do with that is be in law enforcement. It's very hard to be in law enforcement. There aren't a lot of police jobs. It's the background and what you have to go through to get the job is very strenuous. So you may or may not get the job. I would want, you know, a young person to have a degree in like accounting or something else, so that if it turns out that maybe policing isn't for you, you have something else to fall back on. Meanwhile, for most police agencies, you just need a degree or 60, for state police it's 60 college credits. I don't know, other agencies may have different requirements. You just need a degree. It can be in anything. Mm-hmm. So get your degree, have something to fall back on. And if you think policing is something you want to do, keep your options open by all means. But like I said, and that's in any walk of life.
So I'll end by saying this then. Too much is given, much is expected. And one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible is a person's gift, she'll make room for them. Well, you know, you have a gift. God has blessed you and it's going to make room for you to help and bless so many people. And I'm telling you right now, you got my vote when you retire. All right. Whatever you run for, I am with you. So thank you, Bobby Murray. All right. I look forward to big, big things from you. And again, I got to give a shout out to Mom. I know she's going to say, why did he tell my nickname Pumpkin? Most people don't know that. See, so we're dating ourselves. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. So remember this. Watch your thoughts, for they become your words. Watch your words, for they become your actions. Watch your actions, for they become your habits. And you better watch your habits, for they become your character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. I love you. God loves you. And it ain't nothing you can do about it. All right. And last but not least, let me finish with this. Until next time, folks, don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference.
That was H. Bosch Jr. with another interview, and there's a part two that we'll have next week. So stay tuned and find more interviews on the Triple E's at our website, mediasanctuary.org.
A year ago, Mama Love founded Mother to Son, Mothers Talk to Your Sons About Gun Violence, a member organization of the MLK Labor and Community Network. In her first visit to the show, I talk with Mama Love about her organization's summer jam coming up on Saturday at the Troy Boys and Girls Club and her mission to involve mothers in the 518 and all around the world to stop their sons from shooting each other. Mama Love, will you please introduce yourself and your organization to our listeners?
Hello, everybody. I'm Mama Love. I am the founder of Mothers to Sons. Mothers, talk to your sons about gun violence. I'm the newest organization right here in the city of Troy, and I'm representing all Tri-Cities 518 Albany Troy and Schenectady.
Thank you very much. I understand you have an event coming up on Saturday. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I got the Mother to Son Summer's Jam, and it's fun for the families, for us to all get together. We got a stand-up comedian, we got DJs, we got plenty of food, we got different resources from mental health, unified services, Unity House, other outlet to have resources there for our children. Purpose of this event is just to, again, to gather all the families together and for us mothers to sit down and conversate on how to conversate with our boys about the guns, because our sons are constantly shooting at each other daily, worldwide. All my events are about just getting together, having fun, and coming up with solutions on how to get the guns out of our own children's hands.
Where is the event?
The event is located this Saturday, August 13th, Troy Boys Club, and that's 1700 7th Avenue, Troy, New York.
What time?
And the time's from 2 to 6. The Mother to Son Summer Jam at the Troy Boys Club.
Tell me how you got into this work.
So it started last year, 21, July 13th. I started walking the streets. I mean, it started because my son got shot June 30th, 2020 in the city of Troy. And he survived all 6 bullets. So that was enough for me to say, hey, we got to get involved. Us mothers, we got to save our own sons. We don't know who shot my son. I don't want them coming back. So I had to get involved. I had to show my face to show these people I care about my kids. I need my kids to know how much I care about them. And so we raise these children. We know what our kids are doing in the streets. It's time for us to get involved and talk to our sons about the guns. Yeah, so that's how it all started for me. We can no longer allow our children to make those kind of choices, to shoot at each other, to die, go to jail for the rest of their lives. We have to show them that they need to choose life and freedom. That's more important to me. That's what brought it about, because my son, he survived, and I don't want them to come back and kill my kids. See, I thought it would be easy if I can grab all the mothers like me, because we raised these kids, and I took my kids to a whole lot. And now I'm getting my master's. I'm interning here at the Chambers, and the kids are still shooting each other. So it doesn't sit right with me. We have to get involved. We have to be better role models for our own kids. And at the end of the day, our sons, we know what they're doing in the street. Why would I have a 16-year-old in my house or a 14-year-old with guns? We know what our kids are doing. Again, we have to take the same energy we put into Black Lives Matter. We have to put that same energy into saving our own kids. Put that same march into that same kind of energy. Anything to keep your son from shooting my sister's son or my neighbor's son, because we're all related in these cities, Albany, Troy, Schenectady. We all know each other. And so how can we not get involved? So I thought it was going to be easy. I find it kind of challenging, though. I find it kind of challenging with mothers getting involved. It doesn't matter how old they are. We got to save our sons.
Absolutely. I'm interested in your saying that you thought it would be easy and you're finding it unexpectedly to be more difficult. Can you tell me about some of the successes that you've had so far? And then what are the challenges that you're finding that makes it not as easy as you thought it would be?
So the challenges first for me would be the mothers all participating. Or having an interest. Some are rather sit at home and bury the kids instead of not burying them. Don't take that choice. Don't accept the fact that it's a norm for our kids to be shooting at each other. Don't accept that. Stand up for your kids. Take the guns, talk to your sons about these guns and get these guns off the streets. What I found to the success of this is that I only wanted one event last year. I never asked for an organization. So now I'm an organization. I'm under the umbrella of the Albany and Troy Boys and Girls Club. So now that makes it a success for me. I didn't ask for it. God put it in my hand. He knows he has anointed me for this. So now I find it where I can talk to these kids. Some listen to me, you know. I'm working in the schools with the kids, the high-risk students. I've been reaching out to superintendents from Rensselaer County to Albany County because I watch these children being suspended. I'm watching the parents attack the teachers. So that's a problem. So now we got to figure out, why are these kids misbehaving? And it starts at home first. So we got to look into their homes, make sure the mothers are healthy so the kids will be healthy. So yeah, I'm addressing the whole families, making them healthy. Also, I'm working inside the jail systems. I'm working with Rensselaer County Jail, inmate services, focusing only on the shooters because I want their attention and I want their mother's attention. So now you're in jail, you're still going to save the streets because you left your whole family out here now. So they don't think about the whole big picture while they're shooting these guns. We're working with inmates that have been falsely convicted on crimes that they did not do. We have, my first case was Ariel Myers. He's been convicted to 25 to life. He's been down 14 years. The boy is innocent. We got him a court date a couple of months ago. He soon be back in the court. Hopefully his case, his sentence will be overturned and he'll get a new trial. So yeah, that's the success of the mother to son. I get to work the schools with the families, with the streets. And I actually from these streets of Troy. So everyone knows me. They know me in Albany and Schenectady. Again, I get to have hands-on with the streets and interact with them, right, hands-on and with their mothers. And that's the success of it. And again, the downfall for me with this program, this organization, is some of the mothers not willing or ready to change or help their kids, or don't know how to help their kids, don't know how to talk to their kids. That's the thing where we're not judging. We're just going to figure out how to help them help their kids and come up with solutions. That's always the word of the day, solutions. How do we resolve this? How do we make this better? And I don't believe in when they start talking about, hey, you can't save them. You can't save them. They're doomed. I don't pay any attention to that. When people talk negative, I just go on to the next people and hopefully we get some positive out of it. I'm determined and I can't stop and I won't stop and I will continue to move forward with this mother to sons. Mothers, talk to your sons about gun violence until I get mothers worldwide on board. Mothers worldwide on board.
Let me ask you this. Are you doing this all by yourself?
So I have a lot of people now from different agencies that constantly reach out to me saying, what can we do to help? And you know what I found out? A lot of them, their kids are not even the shooters. Their kids are, they don't even understand. I got a lot of mothers that are just hardworking women and their kids are actually good kids that have got on board. So it's been very diverse and I'm really excited about it. That's why it's mothers to sons, because it doesn't matter the color of the kid. Even though it's a black on black crime in my eyes, with these black kids shooting each other, but a mother, all kids matter to all mothers. So I got some people that have been reaching out to me, but a lot of it I've been doing alone and feeling kind of like alone. But then God all of a sudden been putting the right people in my life, the right people to guide me. And Deacon Ford just called me a few minutes ago, Jerry Ford, he's excellent. So I got Team Harold on my side. I got Tarasha on my side. I got Patrick Doyle, the Boys Club, Albany and Troy Boys Club. I got mental health. I got mental health of Rensselaer County supporting me. We got people that really care. I got my nieces that are involved, my daughters, so, and my mom with all her prayers. So I'm feeling encouraged. And when people don't want to participate, I just say, I'll wait for you to get on board, because eventually we need all mothers worldwide.
If people want more information,
they should probably come to the Mother to Son Summer Jam this Saturday, August 13th at the Troy Boys Club from 2 to 6, and enjoy the day, the food, the comedians, the music. Obviously, we're going to grab some mothers and sit down and talk about how do we get the guns out of our own children's hands. And the main thing we really, really need in this city, 518, and I want to start it right here in the city of Troy, we need a sports center for our kids. We have nothing for them. See, we can't even offer them nothing but the Boys Club. And that's limited hours, limited times. I want a 24-hour sports center. And I want to be able to put mental health in there, a daycare in there, a gym for basketball, for football, music studio. And we want to have beds in case these kids don't have any place to go. I want to have a 24-hour door for our children right here in the city.
I want to thank you so much, Mama Love, for coming on. I hope you'll come back to the show.
Absolutely.
This has been Kathy Silber for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Mama Love welcomes everybody to the Mother and Son Summer Jam on Saturday, August 13th from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Troy Boys and Girls Club. And as she mentioned, to learn more about the Mother to Son, Mothers Talk to Your Sons About Gun Violence, you can find all that information on that event on Saturday.
At the event?
At the event on Saturday.
Indeed. Next up, members of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition have come on the show many, many times over the years to tell us about the issues with the Dunn Dump, and most recently, just a few weeks ago, to talk about one of their early morning protests at the dump. Actually, the day after the landfill's permit expired. I'm pleased to welcome to the show Bob Welton for the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition to fill us in on all the latest. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me here. This is great.
We had a last minute opening and I really appreciate you stepping up. So I did a little reading up about you on your website about the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition. And the one thing I had not realized that it was formed because of the Dunn landfill or the Dunn dump. Can you tell us about your history and then sort of bring us up to date on what's going on with the Dunn landfill?
Yeah, so the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition is a grassroots movement. We're people from all over the Capital District. We're not just from Rensselaer, but we have people from Rensselaer as well, and East Greenbush and Albany, Menands, you name it. We've got somebody involved. And we've got a lot of support from the Rensselaer County Justice Center. We've got support from the Sierra Club. We've got support from Riverkeeper. We've got a lot of groups that are joining with us. So the Dunn landfill, okay, was approved by DEC in 2012. It was opened in January 2015. It takes construction and demolition debris from seven states. It allows up to 100 trucks a day to come through the city streets and the residential area of Rensselaer to get to the dump. The dump is located less than 500 feet from the Rensselaer City School with 1,100 K through 12 students in it. And it's so close, it's less than 200 feet from the baseball field. It's less than 200 feet from the soccer field. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And, you know, it should have never been there. It's even when people talk about, well, not in my backyard, this is in our backyard, right in the middle of our backyard.
So what are the health hazards of Dunn? And I'm just curious to know whether DEC could have predicted this and not authorized it in the first place.
Well, they had the option, but, you know, we have a lot of information about that, but they did not exercise it. I don't think the review was, let's say, as intensive as it should have been, given especially the fact that it's in the middle of a residential and next to a school. I don't think you'll find hardly another C&D dump in the country that's next door to a school. That's the thing that's just unbelievable. So the problems with the health. Okay, so you've got dust from the landfill. We know there's PFAS in there. We know there's PCBs. There's obviously things like arsenic, there's asbestos, there's lead, there's all kinds of toxic materials that come from construction debris. And, you know, you can't control completely the dust. So the dust is always a factor, and you don't know what's happening to the people who are inhaling this on a regular basis, especially kids who are developing, who are the most vulnerable. So the part about this that makes it so difficult with DEC is DEC relies on facts. So they do tests, right? They do tests, but the tests are, the standard is when it's a health hazard, that's when it's an issue. The problem with all this stuff, it's long-term health effects. It's like these kids who are going there for, you know, 8 years or so, 20 years from now, who knows what the effects of what's lodged in their lungs are going to be. So it's a difficult thing to prove, but you have to have some faith that this is a bad situation. And you know the other health effects, you've got the trucks that we've measured their decibel levels, and they're up to 107 decibels. That's as loud as a jet plane taking off.
Wow.
It's and they're huge. They're 60 tons when fully loaded. And they're right next to the homes. We've got people who live right on Partition Street, and the trucks go rolling by. It's a nightmare for those people. Their property values have dropped. Their health is affected. Noise, you know, affects health, affects mental health, and affects your cardiac system. It's extremely stressful for people. So this is really a bad, bad situation. It should have never happened.
Yeah, I think we can stipulate that even if the tests aren't showing to the satisfaction of DEC's blinded sort of standards, we can stipulate that those harms are there, and some of them are proven harms. Let me ask you this. So their permit expired on July 19th, and this is what I just don't understand. DEC said, well, we're going to give you more time because we need more time to decide. What's up with that?
Well, the way the laws and rules work, if the landfill had applied in time, which was in January, which they did, then DEC can respond to their application. And as long as this is, it's a process, they can continue operating. So July was their expiration date. And of course, now we're in August. So they're allowed to keep going. And the process is that DEC has told them a couple of times now that they need to revise their plan. There's a lot of things they have to do. They have to measure noise levels. They have to look at the greenhouse gas emissions. They have to look at the exhaust things. There's more that they need to ask them to do, but they have time to do that. So nothing really happens that really makes any real decisions until that's done. So, yes.
Thank you. I want to leave time for us for you to tell us about your August 25th press conference. I got about a couple minutes left. What's going on with that?
Okay, so we did a pretty thorough analysis of the original application that came in from the Dunn people. They had an engineering firm do it.
Back in 2012?
Yeah, probably even started earlier than that, but that's approved by DEC. And we also looked at the entire approval process. We looked at all the paperwork. We got all kinds of FOIL requests. And we found that it was really inadequate and did not measure up. There's just so much, considering where this landfill is, that could have been done that wasn't done. So that's what the press conference is about, to reveal all that information. So
that will be very important. Do you expect that this release of this information will substantially change the way DEC is handling this?
DEC has the information. We gave it to them in May, but no real response from them. So they have it, but we feel, it's important for the public to know about it. And the only way we know to get that out is to try and get it the media to cover it. And it is pretty important. It's a pretty sad situation for the people who live around the landfill. It's just not good.
I want to thank you for coming on the show, for the work that the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition does on the Dunn dump. The way you're putting it is that this is important work that needs to be done. And thank you for not only doing it, but coming to tell us about it. And we're looking forward to your updates. We're looking forward to some good results.
Welcome to any of us that, can be on here. We'll come back anytime you want us. We know how important it is to tell people about this. That's the secret. So thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
You can find our previous segments about the Dunn landfill on our website. Stay tuned to Hudson Mohawk Magazine for continuing coverage on this subject. And that's our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Sina Bazila-Hickey.
And I'm Kathy Silber. We want to thank the volunteers who made this episode possible: Willie Terry, Mark Dunley, H. Bosch Jr., and me, Kathy Silber.
We want to hear from you. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Media Sanctuary, or send us an email at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Full episodes and individual stories are available on demand on our website, mediasanctuary.org, and on your favorite podcast platform. To all our listeners, we appreciate you listening. Until next time.